Hello, 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 and welcome to Buzz Binging. My name is Natalie.
And I'm Christy, her mom.
And we are on season 3, episodes 5 and 6, called Coo and Something in Welsh.
Yeah, something, it's Troesog. Oh, I wrote it down.
Cymru? Cymru?
Troesog Cymru, and it translates to Prince of Wales.
How fitting.
It is actually fitting. It does make sense for that episode, and we are going to get to that very shortly. So we have our usual disclaimers, and they include that, oh yeah, there's going to be cursing.
It happens.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely, this season. And that there will be spoilers and everything for other seasons and stuff like that.
Probably. Oh, definitely next episode, for sure.
Oh, for sure, yeah.
There's no escaping it at this point.
No, there's no. There's not. And of course that we're also having beverages. Mm-hmm. So what are you having?
I am having lemon lime Gatorade.
The breakfast of champions, or whatever it is that we're doing.
It's early.
So I am having something that is a variation on a champagne cocktail. It's called the Prince of Wales, which I think is appropriate for the second episode that we're covering here. For those who are unfamiliar, I've actually had this before. It is a sugar cube with cognac. It's half an ounce of cognac, half an ounce of Grand Marnier, and topped with champagne and a little, a couple drops of Angostura bitters. Ugh. And it is quite tasty.
It's all like bitter stuff.
I know, but it's all it is a scent. So it's like a citrus scent.
Well, I'm not there, so I can't smell it.
No, you can't, but it is quite tasty. And it is, as I said, appropriate. I mean, yeah, it's interesting that you add to a champagne cocktail some Grand Marnier, whatever. But it is, it's nice. It is a nice cocktail. So this episode begins with Mr. King, and you don't see his face, but he is showing up at the Daily Mirror. He is clearly the editor in chief of the Daily Mirror.
They really want you to know that his name is Mr. King because they repeat it 27 million times.
Because he's like a king.
Good morning, Mr. King. Hi, Mr. King. What's up, Mr. King?
He comes up in a Rolls Royce, just all the things. And it is Lord Royce of the Vale from Game of Thrones.
I did not realize that was his first name, but I do know.
This is his last name. It's Lord Royce. I mean, I don't know what his first name is. It's something Royce.
He's an older guy. He was in the Vale.
He's like one of these super loyal people. But oddly, the irony is not lost on me in this episode. So he is being presented with a story about this economic crisis that's happening.
Apparently, the trade gap is 107 million pounds, which is like the worst in UK history. And apparently, like, the palace is like, don't worry about it. It's just like, Jesus.
Well, it's not just the palace, the prime minister. I mean, right. So the headline, he changes the headline to enough is enough. Mm-hmm. Like, basically, get these fuckers out of here. We can't keep living like this because the quality of life sucks. And so the cabinet is meeting with the prime minister who, I got to tell you, Mr. Wilson's not my favorite of the prime ministers.
He's so boring.
And he's weak.
Very.
He's very weak and mealy-mouthed, and I find him annoying.
I agree with what Elizabeth said a couple episodes ago, where it's just like, well, at least these people would have done it to my face, or something
right.
like that.
He's like a nothing, right? And she refers to him that way. And of course, it may be just the writers commenting on Wilson, and they wanted to do it through some character, so there we are. But the cabinet wants to deflect their failures onto Lord Mountbatten, Dickie.
And that's now played by Charles Dance.
Who we absolutely love. Tywin Lannister, I love you.
But apparently he's like been working like against the economy by spending so much on defense and stuff like that.
Right. So this is always the argument against a large defense budget. Is that, blah, blah, blah. It's like, oh, you're a warmonger, those kinds of things. And of course they use all of that phrasing when they talk about Dickie Mountbatten, but he is a product of the Second World War. And in his context, it's kind of the Churchill mentality as well. You know, this is a guy who actually knows what the Nazis did, and fought against it successfully. And again, one of the things I love about this episode, and obviously we're going to get into it, is that you get a real sense of what a military leader Dickey was. Because up until this point, it's just, with, oh, you like your uniforms. He was a very influential person for good reason. Mm-hmm. And so you get more of a sense of that in this. And of course, you also get it because it's Charles Dance and he's fabulous, mm-hmm. As an actor. So they want to deflect onto him and say, oh, you know, he's ruining the economy because he refuses to make defense cuts. They want him kicked out, but
they also just want to make good headlines at this point.
Right, but Wilson's response is interesting. He's like, he's currently in the tent. In other words, he is supportive of the government at this point. And do we want to make another enemy?
That's
because
fair.
We've got a lot of enemies.
Also, as someone who's so close to the queen, I don't know if it would be wise to do that.
Exactly.
Because it's not like he can control her or anything. It's just like it put a bug in her ear about how, like, oh yeah, they dismissed me. Aren't they awful? Or even if she doesn't believe that they did a wrong thing, it's still something that's going to like be in her ear. And then he basically gets fired, like in the worst possible way. Like, it's so awkward. Like, the prime minister has him come in and he's just like, we do appreciate how much you've been doing for this country.
Oh God, it's vomit. The man looks great in a uniform. I gotta tell you, Charles Dance, all that.
Yeah, and then he's just like, you're kicking me out. It's like, well, we just want to make sure that blah, 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 blah. And he's like, you're kicking me out. Okay. And I wanted to say, Charles Dance is amazing at arrogant, seething rage. Very specific, but he does it so well because he doesn't explode at him. He doesn't. He's just watching him like with the smirk on his face, just like, wow, you thought you could do that. Wow. All right, fine.
Right. You are a total loser. And in some way, I'm going to crush you.
Yeah, I believe it.
I totally believe you. I mean, the man has so much, he exudes power in a way that like, someone like Wilson simply does not. And so the Lord of the Vale then thinks that this is absurd. And this is an interesting thing because, you know, obviously Wilson and the cabinet thought that the media would be like, yay, we're getting rid of Mountbatten. But the Lord of the Vale, who is an editor-in-chief of the Daily Mirror, which is very supportive or had been very supportive of the Labour government, says, this is obscene.
Well, I think the thing is, at this point, the newspapers are just going to call a spade and see that that was the sacrifice they were trying to make themselves look better. I don't think that they really considered, oh, when they were talking to him about like, oh, you've done so much for this country, but we're kicking you out. They didn't really consider how newspapers are going to perceive that. Like, that he's done so much for this country and they kicked him out. That's ridiculous. Like, even if he was spending stuff on defense, like, it still doesn't look good for you or the government.
It's one of those things when you're talking about the economy, defense spending is one of those areas that many people, you know, on the ground are like, that's one of the things that I expect my government to do is to protect me.
Mm-hmm. It encompasses a lot. So it's not just army stuff. It's like, it's more than that.
Right. It's a lot more than that. And you live on an island. So, you know, you gotta be thoughtful. And you all recently had the shit bombed out of you. So you gotta think about that too. And again, you know, Dickey has that in his head, right?
He's like, just be Tywin at this point.
I love him so much. And so,
oh God, does that mean Philip's a Lannister? Jesus.
Right. So they're taking, what did you just say?
I just said, does that mean, because when you kept saying Tywin, does that make freaking Philip a Lannister? Like, that's messed up. Well, that actually comes up later and it really kind of bugs me because it's
that's an interesting question. We can talk about that
we'll talk about
that
later.
Yes. So they are taking down Dickie's stuff. He's clearly been let go. And he's being sent out. They've made a cake for him. You know, like after like these years and years
this of service. Farewell. It's not even like extravagant. It's just
no, it's a cake and they sing. And this actually is kind of lovely. The way the building is set up at the Defense Ministry mm-hmm. is that it is a rotunda. And so the staff comes out and they sing Auld Lang Syne to him and the echo is lovely. And you see him walk out in all of his, you know, uniformed, you know, stuff. And it's noble.
But he does see like these people who seem to actually be happy he's leaving. So
there are some. Yeah.
A little, yeah, and he kind of like glares at them. It's like,
right. Oh, right. But and again, I think that there is always that element that you're going to have as people age. Like, you know, you've got people who seem to be old school, redundant, and that is a theme throughout this season, isn't it? So, you know, it's a theme we're going to come back to.
And then you get to see Dickie go home and is clearly obsessed with dogs because there's so many statues and he loves his dog. And then he's in a bath petting his dog. And I said, this part of the sequence is weirdly long.
It is. So he's in the bath with Scotch and a dog that he's petting. That's not how you get clean, dude. We need to have a dog.
That's not my point. And this comes up a lot later on in this episode, but there are so many sequences that are just like, oh, look at this thing. It doesn't tell you anything. You just see Tywin Lannister in a bathtub petting a dog. It's not like you're getting an insight into his psyche. You're just watching him in a bathtub. Not that Charles isn't selling the fuck out of it. He is. I'm just saying it doesn't make any sense why they spent so long with him coming home to his dog. They spent a good minute on this, and that one shot of the bathroom is so long. It makes no goddamn sense. And this is my problem with the director for this one. Not that they aren't a good director, I'm just saying it felt like they were trying to do so much filler into this episode because it is all filler.
Yeah Well, and
you have
how hard is it to direct Charles Dance? The man can just do it, right?
He's just like, all right, just be there, do your thing, and I'll just do whatever the fuck I'm doing. Maybe that's why they added that shot in, because they just want more Charles Dance.
To another expensive set piece kind of sequence, which is the Hogwarts Express. The Hogwarts Express is carrying Elizabeth.
This is another thing. They showed his house for what reason? Like, you see him going around his house. Like, yeah, you got a cool set. I don't know why you had to spend that money, because those shots are pointless. We never go back here, except for, I think, maybe in season 4 or something. It's so stupid. Like, I don't.
Right. And it's very brief in season 4 too. So you see that Elizabeth has arrived at Sandringham. She's examining a horse that had been injured.
This is the episode I was thinking of in season 2.
Right. And the horse is called Apprentice. That's the name of the horse. And and so, you know, they get the horse feeling better because it had been injured. And the next thing we see is Apprentice running at Ascot.
Well, but also they do mention that the trainers are like, oh, we can't, even though the horse is recovered, they don't want him to train in this bad weather. And she's just like, it's raining. It's England. It's going to rain. Like, you're going to have to get over it.
Right. It's mud. And, you know, depending on the injury.
It depends. I mean, I'm just saying, she's upset that they aren't training him.
Regardless, no, I think she's just more upset. Like, she wants to see the horse run, and she wants to see how good, you know, her investment has been, and blah blah blah. Whatever.
Yeah, I mean,
right. So she is at Ascot. She's with Porchy and the Queen Mother, and Dickie shows up. Apprentice looks like he's going to win, but doesn't. Mm-hmm. And Dickie gets sarcastic about we're getting rid of the old antiquated methods like me. And that's what you need to do with your stables and things like that. And Porchy recommends that they travel to see and learn other methods.
Because that's what you do in an economic crisis.
Yeah, you get more horses for racing.
I hate that these two plots are going on at the same time, because it makes Elizabeth look like a bitch.
Totally out of touch, right?
And also just a shitty ruler.
It's exactly what Wilson accused her of at the beginning. It's like, oh, you're horse people, right? You know, like, this is,
Not now, Elizabeth.
Right.
Don't go searching for new methods on updating your stables now, like in the middle of an economic crisis. Like, now's not the time to leave. And right. She talks to the prime minister, and he says that they will have to devalue the pound. And then she's like, in the meantime, she's like staring at her horse painting. And I'm just
Why? It's like, first of all, do you have a painting of every horse that is actually a racing horse for you? Because, oh my God, how expensive is that shit?
But also,
it's insane.
And again, these next couple episodes really make her look like a horrible ruler and someone who's not paying attention to the people at this point. Like, she's not paying attention to, oh, we're going to devalue the pound. She's just like, oh, okay, well, that sucks. And then she's just like, I'm going to go away for like a week. But then she goes away for a month. And I'm just like,
are you kidding? I'm going to go away for a week. My queen mother will stand in. Yeah, this is not a great time for you to devalue the pound because I need like things. It's almost like I'm going to be spending pounds. Kind of like, don't devalue the pound now. That's bad timing.
Is a bad time to devalue a currency. I don't know why you're being like this, Elizabeth. They're just making her look awful.
Right. So Elizabeth and Portia fly to France. Dickie gives a speech about devaluing the pound, ruining the economy. And it's a very inspirational speech. I think it's really very, the first time I saw it, this time less so because of course I knew it was coming. But he recites The Road to Mandalay. It's a poem, and it is a very patriotic British soldiers poem. We need leaders now, kind of is how he leads into it. That's the segue.
He also
brings the audience to his feet. It's like they're all like, oh yeah, we do need real leaders, and like, you're a real leader kind of thing.
Yeah, he also says, let us cherish our past glories. And right. Then also when they did all recite it, I was like, it's kind of like a cult, but anyway.
It is a group of people who come to hear him speak too. But
I also wanted to say before we move on from the speech,
I'm not moving either. Go ahead.
Well, after the speech, I wrote down, I love Charles Dance. He gives this small smile after the speech, and it's just so good. It's so good. It's the smallest thing. It's just a little bit of a smirk, but the sadness in his eyes of like knowing that even though like he's saying this, it's not going to make any difference. Oh, it's so good.
Right. And I put down that there's a much more warrior-like portrayal of Dickie.
Yeah, he's completely different from that like guy from like the last two seasons. And I kind of like it. He's not just like a flouncy, like I'm gonna dress up with Charles kind of thing. It's just like,
right? No, he is very much, and again, you can see that appearances are important to him as a person, but the appearances are important because they exude the power within, kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So again, there's a lengthy discussion about his military accomplishments and, you know, Lord Royce of the Vale or Mr. King or whatever. They want to look to Dickie to bring the country back.
And he's like, let's get lunch at the Bank of England and we'll talk about this proposal we have. And it's like, that sounds sketchy, but okay.
Right. And so meanwhile, Elizabeth is in France visiting stables.
I wrote down in all caps, I'm bored. What am I supposed to get from these coinciding storylines?
Well, frivolity. I mean, I don't know. Or like, oh, I need a rest. Let me hang out with my horses. Like, maybe we are juxtaposing a warlike stance for England with this rather passive, bucolic thing. Yeah, I don't know. I don't get it. And, you know, honestly, if your message is one is better than the other, you're not conveying it.
Yeah, that's why I'm confused. I'm confused on why they're like, oh,
there's no point of view.
Oh yeah, the prime minister sucks. He's not doing anything about this economic crisis. Well, neither is the queen. The queen is off spending money. Like, this is a stupid way to like, because then later on she's like, oh, she's the key to everything. It's like they're not condemning her at all for like being away from the people at this point and talking with the prime minister about this stuff. Like, she's not like, I know she's not really supposed to get into the politics, but she still has those meetings with the prime minister to know what's going on, and she's missing those meetings to go off horseback riding. Like, it's so fucking stupid. Anyway, then they go have lunch. She has lunch with Porchy,
and Porchy's like, let's go to the US and see about what they do. What? She's like, you think we should? Okay.
France is closer than the U.S. Like, you're really...
Here's part of what pisses me off. The conversation she has with Porchy is that, hey, while the Queen Mother's covering for me, she'll be fine. Not a single fucking mention of her children or of Philip.
Where's Edward? What the fuck? Where's Edward? Where's the other one, Andrew? Where it's probably best that I forget Andrew. But also just like there, yeah, exactly. Philip, I want to say, because I did check. Philip does not show up in this Porchy-centric storyline until the last 5 minutes, and it kind of pisses me off.
No, it doesn't kind of piss me off. It does piss me off.
Oh, we'll get to it, but because I'm conflicted about the ending, but I wrote down, even though the economy is in shambles, Elizabeth agrees to go
for another. Right, because, I'm having so much fun. So, like, the Lord of the Vale, then has this lunch and they have Dickie there and he talks about it, and this is a very interesting mindset that the UK is heading toward being a vassal state. In other words, we're going from being an empire toward being subservient to other countries very, very, very quickly. And so, there's been a seizure. Dickie says that he can't be part of a coup.
Yeah.
But there is an argument if this is wartime, because there has been a seizure by the government, and there has been by this Labour government of various assets.
The bank is like, they're devaluing the pound. That's a big fucking deal.
Right. But it's not just that they are seizing like the power companies and things like that, and making them into state agencies without like due process, what we would call in the US due process, that I don't know what they call Magna Carta stuff over there, but without the government's or the people's say so, right? And so that to him is a seizure that is something that could be argued as a wartime issue.
You know, it's kind of interesting that they don't do the angle of, hey, the queen can put in place a state of emergency, and they figure this out later, but I'm just kind of like, you didn't immediately think of that, because I immediately thought of that, because like they were talking about like in the past two seasons, well, at least the first season is in particular, when everybody was like, let's get Winston out of there, we can do it a state of emergency, we can kick him out, whatever, Elizabeth can do that. I don't know why they weren't thinking of, hey, let's get the queen on our side immediately. Like, that's the other part of this government. Like, come on, think. Come on, Royce. Come on, do something better than this. Anyway, then, Dickie says he can't be a part of it, but they're like, it's not peacetime. It's like, okay, I'll think about it. And let's meet in 2 days.
He wants 48 hours to think about the legality of it, basically. Meanwhile, Elizabeth's in Kentucky, and it's raining, and they're like apologizing for the weather. She's like, oh, we're from England.
Well, also, there are protesters right gathered to rebel against Winston. Not Winston, Wilson.
Yes.
they're like outside his door or whatever. It's a whole thing. Anyway, yeah, Elizabeth goes to Kentucky. Then you see intercut with this, which again is so bizarre. You see Dickie watching old films of coups in like France. And
right, but you also see that the stock exchange is empty. In other words, everything has come to a standstill because of this devaluation of the pound. Mm-hmm. And the government is cracking down on the protesters, which again, that's government against the people. This is a wartime thing. This is a justification for a potential coup, right? Elizabeth is learning about managing pastures.
Well, Elizabeth is impressed by Americans, and I wrote in parentheses, at least we got horses right, because apparently we can't do anything according to the crowd correctly. Because we're just so advanced dumb Americans.
Scientifically.
But we're just so good in the frontier with those horses. Like, yeah, exactly. I this. Well, at least they got one thing right. But then she wants Porchy to be the new manager of the stables. And it's like, you'll be around all the time. Won't everyone love that? And then I wrote down, I'm glad we aren't getting another jealousy subplot, but at least it would make the storyline interesting and include Philip in the episode.
Yeah, I know. And so Porchy also wants to extend their stay in the UK because he needs to learn more stuff, and I'll only do it if we're going to do it right, and blah, 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 which would be expensive, right? Because they're talking about overhauling basically everything they do, from how they grow the grass in the pastures to like every freaking thing. They're talking about everything.
Very scientific. But,
right.
Because and so, is this smart?
Right. So, and Alyssa's like, oh, maybe we can stay another week kind of thing. So meanwhile, Dickie is discussing the hallmarks or the things that would be necessary for a successful coup. Mm-hmm. And what he says is you've got to control the media. There are administrative targets that you need to be able to control. Mm-hmm. I didn't write down number three, and I feel bad about that.
I didn't write down any of these. I just wrote down, he says.
Hang on, I'm not done. So number four is you have to have control of the military, which, you know, again, being a military guy, he can probably swing that, but it also includes the police, which is not easy, as he points out.
It's also unquestionable loyalty. And it's like, you can control some of the army or the military.
You can't control all of it.
Control everything.
Right. And then there's the most important part, which is legitimacy. And he's like, you know, you've got these institutions, the courts, and so on and so forth, that aren't going to acknowledge anything without legitimacy from a higher power. And he's like, you can't really do it without a queen, without the queen of court. And so he's like, I know her. I can call her. You want me to call her? Kind of thing.
On her.
Apparently, which is a little creepy, honestly.
Apparently, Dickie is her second cousin, which is going to be interesting in 2 minutes. Then Elizabeth and Porchy, I'll explain it later. Elizabeth and Porchy are having dinner, and a call from Dickie comes in. She's like, nah, we don't need that right now. And then she continues.
This Elizabeth and Porchy dinner pisses me the fuck off.
I have a couple quotes. She's like, this is how I'd like to spend all of my time. And I'm like, with Porchy? That's interesting.
That's how it sounds. And Porchy takes it that way.
Yeah, because how else is he supposed to take it? And then she thinks she was born for breeding horses and all that stuff. And she looks like she's about to cry. And I was like, I thought she couldn't do that. And then...
Well, and here's the other part of that. It's like, we have seen in prior seasons that Philip's not all into the horses.
He's not. Right? There's a reason
why he's not. I want to spend all my time doing horse shit. Lovely.
I think that one little thing that they could have added to at least incorporate Philip a little bit more into this episode is to have a little thing before she leaves for the goes to travel, have a little conversation with Philip about like, oh, so where are you going? It's like, oh, we're going to Normandy for like a week or something. And I'm just like, we? And then it's just like Porchy. And I'm like, great. And then all that stuff, at least it would set a tone. And so it's not like he's completely out of the picture. It's not like, cause she's not even thinking about that right now. She's not thinking about her family. She's not thinking about her husband. She's not thinking about any of it or her country. Where is she? She's in America.
Well, and again, I find this, it is a failure on many levels, I think, in this season, with the writing, with the direction, with the acting, like there's no misgiving in this portrayal at all.
You're supposed to feel like sympathy or empathy for her at this point. And I'm just kind of like, you're talking about an unlived life that you don't have anymore, which is sad. But at the same time, it's not like she's doing it like, oh, I wish that this is, she's like, I wish this is how my life would have gone. Like with, and she's like, in this particular company, this is how I wish my life had gone. And I'm like, excuse me? So you wish you hadn't married your husband? You wish you...
Yeah, all and it would have been easier and I would have loved it more kind of thing.
Like you had this, a different speech that was so much better in like the last season where it's just like, or the first season actually, where she's just like, it might've been easier to be with Porchy. However, I love you. That's the whole point.
Right. And you're the only one and blah, blah, blah. It's like, this is just horse shit. I'm sorry. The whole thing is fucking horse shit and I hate it.
Hey,
all right, so moving on.
I love it. It's horseshit.
And Elizabeth's really impatient, but she ends up like, oh, God, I've got to take the call, freaking Dickie, whatever. And Porchy is kind of overcome because she's cut off in this speech of, oh, I love doing this.
I don't blame him though, because
I don't either because of the way she's phrasing it and the portrayal, right?
Mm-hmm.
There is no like second thought misgiving here.
Another interesting thing is the way they staged like their dinner. They're next to each other and not across the table from each other. And so it's like more intimate. And I'm like, this is kind of weird. Like you're talking about this unlived life and you're looking at this guy like he is a portrayal of your unlived life of like, oh, I wish I could be with you and with the horses in the pastures. And I'm just like, how is he supposed to take this? He's had this crush on you for like ever. How, right. And I think he's still married. I don't know why. And you're married and you have kids. Go home.
Yeah. I mean, there's so much wrong with this. There's so much fucking wrong with this.
Yeah.
She's impatient. She takes the call. And you see that Porchy, and they do have this, like, they cut to him, like, as she's leaving, like, he's just kind of overcome with, like, oh my God, this could actually happen. Holy shit. Yay.
I actually think that he's a really good actor. I think he does a really good job in this, but I'm just like, again, where's Philip? Why aren't we thinking
of him? All of that is expressed in like a 3-second, cut to him. They move on. But it actually is the PM on the phone, Wilson. Yeah. And he's like, Dickie's trying to have a coup.
Mm-hmm.
And Elizabeth's like, what in the actual fuck is going on?
which is
the right response. Yeah. And she does have the actual responses. And she, when she returns to Porsche, she's like, well, drink up. We're going home.
Yeah.
Or I'm going home.
Yeah. The PM says they might have to take steps, quote unquote. And Elizabeth's like, I'll handle it. And then, she's like, drink up, Porchy, we're going home. But there's this little thing that really bugs me in this part. And you know what it is? I don't think you can guess, but that shot of her walking up the stairs is so fucking long. And it loses the impact of her opening the doors and being like, drink up, Porchy, we're going home. Like if you just had you had her at the phone, have her like she's processing. And Olivia Colman, again, it's great. I'll handle it. Like hang up the phone, have a couple seconds for her to just process. Because again, Olivia Colman does a great performance of this, but you're not seeing any of it like when she's walking up the stairs because it's such a long shot. And then
you have it's the punch. You could just have her with the eyes like her,
And then like drink up, Porchy, we're going home. That's it. Like you don't need the up the stairs shot in slow motion. You don't. You don't know why there's so many random shots.
The pacing is just so off in this season. It's just bleh.
Good facial acting, though. I thought she did a good job.
Yeah, I think she did too. So Dickie arrives at Buckingham Palace to see Elizabeth, and we know that there's going to be a dressing down from Nanny involved in this. Mm-hmm. She is clear, but again, she's more overtly upset than we have seen. It's part of the direction. It's part of the actual writing, and it's part of the performance that I'm kind of like, I feel like the impact that Claire Foy had in the way those things were done was bigger in the first 2 seasons. But anyway, she's clearly upset. Dickie wants to talk and whatever, and he's asking her, why are you protecting this weak, pathetic person that's Wilson? She's like, I'm protecting democracy. There's a process. And you know what? Until he's voted out, he's it.
Again, I think that one thing on The Crown you can guarantee is going to be in any given season is going to be the topic of doing nothing and it being important. And they say it so many times, and they say it in the fucking next episode in like a lot more depth in the next episode. But I'm just like, at least it's about democracy this time and not about like, oh, we just do nothing. And then it's just, I hate it.
Right. Again, I think it is because it is phrased the same way over and over and over
again. Yeah. They don't divert. It's not diverse in the way they phrase it. It's so annoying. Right.
It's like, oh, this is a theme. In case you haven't picked it up, it's a theme. We do nothing.
This is something we do or don't do.
Right. And again, I think that there is And we're going to see it in other episodes, I think, you know, where there's inaction or talking is given some value, which again, you know, I get it, but you know, I tend to be more on the Anthony Bridgerton end of man of action kind of thing. You know, I tend to respect the action. Dickie is, you know, at least in this episode, a man of action. Now, up until
you're going to love the like the third episode we're going to be covering. So
we're going to talk about it. Anyway, so that episode. So then Dickie, and so Elizabeth's like, you have things you can do in your retirement. And again,
you spend time with your family, Elizabeth, you dipshit. I'm sorry.
Yeah, excuse exactly. me. And I agree with you. But as a person who's recently retired, being told, oh, spend more time with your family, it's like,
you already are.
I have other value. And it is hard to just take my talents and put them in a box and say, all right, all my value is I'm going to go visit my sister.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard. I mean, some of that is true. And, you know, that is something that,
like,
you know,
don't conduct a coup. Like, I think that's right. The thing we should take away from this. Don't conduct a coup.
But right. That, there are ways to use your talents that are still legal.
So
he goes to see Alice and yeah, I love that.
This is another long dramatic look that could have made this, if it was cut like this. I wrote down so many long and dramatic stares in this episode. It could have been 5 minutes shorter. Like, it really could have.
Yeah. So Alice is smoking and he talks, oh, it's just so hard to be me. And she's basically like, look, it's not our problem. It's not our country. And he's like, it is my country. This country has given me, hang on. This country has given me essentially my identity. Everything I have done, every value I've been given, every accolade, more or less, has come from my identity as working for this country. So for him, for Dickie, it is his country. And so it does matter to him what happens. And it breaks his heart. And I get that 100%.
That's great. I agree. What I was going to point out is that Alice is his sister.
Yes.
So he is Philip's uncle and Elizabeth's second cousin at the same time. So they are technically related, which weird. But it's very Tudors. It's very Windsor.
It's
enough that they don't harp on it, but it's still kind of weird that they made sure.
It is.
I wish they didn't tell us that he was her second cousin, so that it wasn't like, oh yeah, well, I'm also his uncle, so that's fine. Anyway,
well, right. So it's awkward. So, but that was one of the things Elizabeth said, that, you know, you have value as being, you know, a brother to your sister, as being a father figure to Philip, and as being, you know, like a, you know, like a, helping the future king, being Charles. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that those are things you can do, which again, all of that's legit, mm-hmm. but it is very hard for someone who has been much more active to have a more passive guiding role rather than just a more active role. And I get it.
I think another thing is that the most active part of those options is being a guide to Charles, but Charles is in school right now. So it's not like he can just like pick up Charles and be like, all right, we're going to do some training or something. It's not like,
well, and Philip's going to do that shit for sure. I mean, Philip's going to do any training. Like, you can go and have a picnic and talk about, oh, do you like your uniforms?
Yeah, he can't really do that much unless it's like, I mean, he can, but it's not like he can do some too much active stuff with Charles at this point because he's still in college. Anyway, then Philip finally enters the episode, and Elizabeth is in her office, and Philip comes in and asks about her trip, and he's like, the trip was supposed to be a week. You were gone almost a month. I said, one, that's irresponsible for the queen. Two, you're the one to talk, Philip. You would be gone for a long time randomly.
Right. And while she's pregnant and like there's like all these constitutional crises and shit, Philip really does not have room to talk here.
He does not have a leg to stand on. Oh, but then he brings up Porchy and her appointing him as racing manager. And she's just like, if you have something to say, just say it. And he's just like, no, I'm happy for you. And that it's going to be like, or good for you. And she's like, yeah, good for us. I'm like, us. And then he's like going to wander up, but then he steps and then he comes back and gives her a kiss and then randomly brings up the coup. Yeah. But then he was like, as he's about to leave again, she's like, I'll be up in a minute. And he's like, oh, will you? And she's like, yes, I thought so. Unless you'd rather I wasn't. And he's like, I'll see you in a minute.
Yeah. No, I think that there is a plan for the evening. But I think one of the things that was really interesting, your father and I talked about it, is when you see Philip at a distance down the hall, she's sitting at her desk before he comes into the room. He looks so much like Prince William. Menzie does. Yes. Go back and look. At a distance, he looks so much, like he's a little bit balding, whatever. He looks very much like Prince William. And that is,
that's fun.
Again, a brilliant casting choice. And I know I've bitched about some of the casting. I feel like Tobias Menzies and
he's a home run. I think he's great.
He's so good. And again, once again, a person we first saw on Game of Thrones, and not in a powerful guy role, although he is like an almost violent evil villain in Outlander. He's creepy as fucking out.
Oh, he's bad in Outlander.
But he has such an amazing range. And I think that he brings a gravitas. Again, he's still not Matt Smith, which I'm sorry. If you're comparing Tobias Menzies and Matt Smith, I'm gonna give the edge to Matt Smith. Tobias Menzies is fucking excellent.
He is
definitely a win, and especially for this cast, he's like the best part of this cast, in my opinion.
He's a gold star.
He gets a gold star for me, that's for damn sure. But he really is great in this role, and I like the fact that he kisses Elizabeth, that he's like, hey, I'm your guy. Don't forget
married that. Me, so we're kind of
you
stuck,
married me.
So.
You're going to end up in my bed, woman, kind of thing, I'll see you in a minute kind of thing. It's like, yeah. I don't think there's really any question.
And that's where the episode ends.
Right. So what was your best part?
I had a couple, oddly enough. I had Charles dance in general. Awesome. Dickie and Alice's talk I really liked, because I didn't realize that I knew that he was, I didn't think that he was actually related to Philip as an uncle. I thought he was just kind of like, oh yeah, it's like a family friend or something, but no, he is actually.
Yeah, it was unclear to me.
It was unclear, but I'm glad they cleared that up, which kind of makes things weirder, but still. And also Elizabeth and Philip's interaction at the end, I do like it. It's really cute and playful. However, it does show trust. I do appreciate that, but I think that Philip being a more active part in this episode and not just coming in at the end would have been more beneficial to showing that trust. Especially after that whole thing about Elizabeth being like, oh, the life I never lived. It's just kind of like, it seems a bit hollow, because he's doing all the work to like be like, oh yeah, well, I'm going to show you I trust you. Which, yeah. I don't know.
I think what that element particularly shows to me is that whole trust, like I trust you not to cheat on me thing, is not one-sided, particularly in this relationship.
Yeah, those are my best parts. What about you?
My best parts are Charles Dance. I mean, oh my god, he's amazing. And that few seconds of Tobias Menzies. I mean, that's really it. Those performances are so fucking good. I really love both of them. The rest of it, I'm like, eh. I really should give some props to the guy who plays Porchy, because you're right, that performance is quite good.
Yeah.
I don't like the character of Porchy. I don't like his spot in this universe.
He's an obstacle.
Yes. And I don't like that necessarily, because I'm a believer in true love and romance and things. But I do think that it is portrayed well. So what were your worst parts?
the disjointed feeling of the coinciding stories. I think that if they were trying to get a message across, I don't really think they got it. Because right. Again, they were condemning the prime minister for his inaction and frivolous spending. And then you go to Elizabeth, who's traveling and buying horses and learning stuff about horses for a month. So I don't, and that's another thing, Elizabeth leaving in a country in crisis.
And what then, the fuck? And can also, I say this again? What the fuck?
And then the empty space in this episode. Again, I think 5 minutes could have been taken off the runtime because of those, like, obviously, like, the crown is full of longing and, like, intense stares. I mean, that's not new. I'm just saying that, like, there was a little bit too much, like, just random stuff, like fat that could have been cut off. Right. Like the random bathtub moment and the stairs. I think the stairs could have been kept in, but I think that it still was a bit long. I don't know. There were just so many moments where I'm just like, this could have been cut. And it's weird because I don't usually think of the show like that because it's usually pretty, like, it's more engaging. But I felt this episode dragged a bit for me because of the off pacing that I noticed. But yeah. What were your worst parts?
The coup. I'm not a person who approves of coups, particularly when you have at the center of it a character, and again, I'm going on portrayal here with Charles Dance as Dickie, a character that should be more noble, even considering it. So I felt like that was, I mean, and, you know, he does say you can't do it, but hey, I'm gonna try. I have real difficulty with that. I also really hated Elizabeth giving Porchy hope. That pissed me the fuck off. Like, you don't know that you have all the power in this relationship and you're saying shit like this to this guy. It's one thing to think it. You do not need for that shit to come out of your mouth. That should never, ever, ever fucking happen. Ever. And so I just don't have any, I that really fucking bothered me. How'd you grade this episode?
It was hard. I don't know, B minus. I didn't particularly hate this episode. I was indifferent towards it, but I don't know where indifferent lands on our scale. So I'm just kind of like, maybe a B minus because I didn't like it all that much. And there were definitely improvements that could have been made. So I'm going to give it a B minus.
So I've written B plus, and much like, I know it's a shock, and I don't know why.
I'm sorry, I cringed for the audience, by the way.
and I don't know why. I mean, I think B plus for me, based on the performances by Charles Dance.
Well, that would give you an A plus, mother. We can't
But he's really fucking great. And we don't get to
good. I'm not saying it isn't.
We don't get to see tons of him in these two seasons, and I love him.
He dies next season, spoiler alert. So yeah, we don't.
So I mean, and he does use his time well. I think his speeches are written well, although they're probably taken like word for word from speeches that were actually out there, or many of them. So I feel like I have to give credit where credit is due, and it is due to him because this is his episode and I love his performance in it.
Well, is it? Because Elizabeth and her horse shit is just like
changing all the time. I ignore the fucking horse shit because it's horse shit. But I feel like that made the whole episode for me. I could downgrade it to a B. I don't think it's a B minus for me because B minus, like the first episode, I don't know that I'd give it a B minus because it's not that level of bad. I agree, it's boring. I think I'm looking at it in the context of this season. In the context of this season, it's pretty good. In the context of The Crown as a show, no, it's not. And I agree with you that there's a lot of fat, but I think there's a lot of fat in these seasons, these two seasons and this and the fifth season. Oh my God,
it's,
I think
all it's fat.
Yeah, it's just fucking awful. And so I feel like I've got to give credit where credit's due. And so it's BB minus, BB plus to me.
Yeah, no, it's B minus for me. I think it's better than some of the episodes we've watched because some of those just made me angry. But this just made me feel nothing, sadly. I felt something when Charles danced.
Well, I felt angry about the whole Porchy fucking business. Well, I felt angry about the idea of a coup. I was angry about those things, but I felt the patriotism in that room, especially the first time I saw this, when Dickie is talking about we need real leadership and we don't have it.
Yep. Anyway, moving on to the next episode.
So I saw Kimru,
butchering this. I'm sorry for anybody.
I know. I really should look at the pronunciation of these
song.
Welsh. They have a lot of weird sibilant.
I think I have enough phlegm in me, but at the same time, I don't want to do it.
In Welsh.
And that sounded like you were just breaking up. Anyway.
Yes. So the Prince of Wales.
The first thing I wrote down, I immediately recognized that I was Welsh and I knew what episode this was. And I was like, it's the Charles episode, but at least it involves theater. I appreciate it.
Right off the bat, I mean, you start with Josh O'Connor.
I love Josh O'Connor.
Great. He's great in this role.
Talk about good
makes
casting.
Me not fucking hate Charles as much as I hate Charles.
Oh no, yeah, no. This doesn't give anything to actual Charles. No. But Josh O'Connor is great as an actor, right, making you hate him slowly.
Well, right, but you kind of you empathize with him on some level in this episode.
But then he starts making shitty decisions, and then
there are shitty decisions for even young Charles. Yeah, last season you have Charles. I'm not going to participate in this run that I said I was going to do all this work on. It's like you're fucking.
Well, I felt worse for him, but then now that he's an adult, it's kind of well, dude, listen, you need to be a little bit smarter than this. But I do love Josh O'Connor in this role. He's great.
He's working on Shakespeare.
Well, first you hear just a lot of vocal exercises people do before a play. I tend to not do too many of these. Usually, unless it's a group thing. As a person who did theater acting, including Shakespeare. It's difficult, but I was thinking about it this week because I am a part of a Shakespeare club at my college, and I was thinking about it late recently that I was just okay, how did I remember any of these lines? Some of them just make no goddamn sense, or at least structure wise, but it really is you have to get your you have to make your mouth catch up with your mind whenever you do Shakespeare. And so I can understand why they started with vocal exercises and stuff like that. And tongue twisters are a big thing that we do for warm-ups, just to loosen your palate and your everything. So it does help. And so I appreciated that. I appreciated being seen. They're preparing, and I'm fairly certain it's Richard II that they're doing, because he starts doing a little bit of a monologue.
It is Richard II, yes. Yeah. And that's what they do at the end.
The hollow crown speech at the end that gives it away.
Exactly, yes.
But he does start a little bit of a monologue for it, and I'm just
If you've not watched the hollow crown with
Q,
you need to see it, because the guy who plays Q in
James Bond.
Daniel Craig. James Bond movies. It is worth seeing because it's a very interesting portrayal. This is also an interesting portrayal, especially of that monologue at the end.
I love it.
I do too. And I think Josh O'Connor is great.
We'll get to it.
There are many levels to this. So
yeah, they're layered.
Right, but you see him all made up, and he's excited about being in this play, and he's excited about, theater things.
One thing I can remark on before we get to the monologue at the end is that I love how he does, how the makeup's done. It's very, I don't know if it's, and it's been a while since I've been in an acting class and learned specifics, but I think it's very commedia dell'arte. I think it's very almost clownish makeup. So it's very exaggerated. And same with like gestures and stuff. So I think it's very much like that, if that makes sense to anybody in the audience but me.
Yeah.
I don't know. That,
yeah.
Just
yeah.
to make people sound smarter. And that I did take an acting class many times as a theater major. So.
You know full well I've complained about, hey, you need more eyeliner. Like, I can't see here, your eyebrows doing.
Has nothing to do with it.
But no, it is important how you are made up. Stage makeup matters. So yeah, he's doing that. He's doing warm-ups. He's doing all of these things. Meanwhile, we have a discussion about, there is about to be the investiture of Charles as the Prince of Wales and how it's going to be happening. And there's this large, and you see Michael Adeen, you know, talking to the PM about, like, it's almost like this military plan, like how they're going to do it. And Wilson's like, you know, the way you're describing this sounds like an invasion rather than investiture.
Well, they were going to do it the exact same way that they did it for David, which is bleh. And so they're going to do it very specifically. It's just, yeah, it is a lot more like an invasion, but it's the way that they have done it before. And I think that it's smart of the PM to like at least bring up the fact that maybe they should evolve it a bit so that's not like imposing.
Well, right. I mean, you imagine that the last Prince of Wales was David, and he's such, he's, I mean, I'm sure he was all into like the appearance part of it, right?
Well, not just that. I think that it also, the fact that he basically abandoned his country, I think that's not a very good sign. And so once you have that debate out of,
right,
and anything and looks better.
That's a theme that's going to be throughout this, what the Prince of Wales does or does not do with Wales as part of the UK. Mm-hmm. He's like, look, what if we had Charles learn some Welsh and give his speech in Welsh?
I think that's smart.
It is smart.
I'm surprised they didn't do that before.
I am too, but you know.
Especially before when there were more Welsh speaking villages. It doesn't make much sense why they didn't at least translate
it. Well, and of course, we really don't know, right? So, you know, I don't know how well records were kept. You get the sense, like, Victoria on, we've got records of how things were done, but we don't necessarily know how some of these processes were handled before that. And some of them may have been just full-on invasions. Don't know. But we, you know, what we're seeing is rather limited. And so Charles is like, hey, I like acting. I want to stay at Cambridge. What do you mean you're going to send me to Wales? I don't want to go.
I mean, I'd be upset too.
And they're like, look, there are separatist stirrings in Wales. We need for you to go to Wales for like just a semester. Right. I mean, not even a full semester and learn some Welsh. And you know, Philip's like, look, just let go of your acting frivolity and go to Wales. And I get it where Philip's coming from. It's like, look,
this is important for the country. You're doing acting. You can do it some other time. I agree. I think it's still, I can understand how disappointed he is because he's basically putting on hold his entire like Cambridge stuff and going to Wales for 3 months without knowing anybody. And also if they're separatists there, he's not going to get a warm welcome. So
well, but you also get the sense that Wales is like going up the country, you know, like we talk about. Like,
we get to that in this conversation because I love it so much. So yes, he talks to Anne about how cold Elizabeth can be with him. And she says she's like, well, I at least you get something. I'm just irrelevant. So she
How much do we love Anne, the actress who plays Anne? She's so fucking great. And she comes up again too, you know, in the next couple episodes.
I also think that her and Charles have great chemistry. It's very good brother sister chemistry. And he says, fancy swapping men, fancy being the heir. And she's like, no, if it means going to Wales. And I thought that was really funny.
Right. And she kisses Charles on the cheek and then punches him in the stomach.
Mm-hmm. I love the dynamic. It's very brother-sister. And I think that's something that's missing from later seasons in particular with all these, like, with all of them being grown and starting families and all that stuff. You don't really get to see the sibling dynamic as much, especially in season 5. Like, right. You get to see none of it. So there's right. a bit in season four that I love, but it's just, you don't get to see enough of it. You barely see the children.
Yeah. And there is a lot of that sibling dynamic. And of course, there's this huge separation too with Andrew and Edward, and you see some of, you barely see any of it really. And so I feel like there is a lot of unexplored territory here. But we yeah, do we get to
focus on horseback riding.
Right. So we've got this pro Welsh meeting, and we find out that this person at this pro Welsh meeting speaking Welsh is, and it's in a poor city, is a professor who's going to be assigned the unenviable task of trying to teach Charles Welsh.
Mm-hmm.
And so he goes up, you see him like going up the stairwell to his office, and the stairwell actually looks like a Harry Potter stairwell to me. It's got like this little turreted thing. It's almost like the one where
it's a spiral staircase.
Right. It's a spiral staircase in a Gothic masonry building. So
it's at the University of Wales.
Yes. And so he, the professor, is very anti Prince of Wales. He's told by his supervisors, look, you got to do this. You've got the best method for learning Welsh. You've said you can teach Welsh to people super quickly. And he's like, well, I only want to teach it to Welsh people. And it's like, sorry, you got to teach it to this guy.
But also he said it will violate every belief in my body. And I was like, too bad. It's the royal family. You have to do it. So,
right. But then part of what convinces him is like, they're going to give the speech in Welsh. And he's thinking, you know, that is something that's meaningful to me.
Yeah. That's at least it's a gesture.
Meaningful to me. And so, Charles shows up in a Rolls Royce to the college.
Well, before they even do this part, he talks to his wife about it. And apparently they met on like a rally.
The professor does. Charles is not. The
professor does. Charles doesn't have a wife yet. We'll get to that shit later. But I think that it's interesting because his wife is also a little bit of a part of the story, because they met in a rally, we find out later. And it's like, this is a huge foundation of our like marriage and relationship, is like being against this shit. Like, right. You're just gonna like do it. And he's like, well, at least there's an attempt. And it's like, fine, whatever, you do you. It's something you have to do, whatever. But then Charles goes to Wales and is being booed. I'm also that Josh O'Connor gets his mannerisms down, like the slight hunch of the shoulders.
Yes.
And I think also I saw like a brief interview or something where he's just like talking about the mannerisms. It was him and Emma Corrin, who plays Diana, talking about how they like got the like accent like hunched a little bit and all that stuff. That he's like, when I noticed that whenever like he gets out of a car, he like checks his pocket square and then he waves. And so I look for it now every time. It's kind of funny. It's like a little game, but
right. But the thing is that is so true, and I feel like that part, those minutiae in the portrayal make it very credible. But he also has the look. He's got the big ears and the kind of the awkwardness mm-hmm. of Charles. And you know, obviously, I've seen Charles on television for a very, very long time. And I think that this portrayal is really quite good. So the professor is like, I'm not going to follow your freaking protocol. I'm not going to bow. I'm not going to call him His Royal Highness. I'm not going to do any of that stuff. You're going to be treated like any other student. And, you know, Charles says like, look, I know you're a Welsh nationalist. This is not going to be easy for you. And he's just like, look, you know, we're going to, you know, do this for my country in Wales. And I'm going to teach you the language because it's a great language kind of thing. And he puts Charles in a booth with headphones and says, you're going to learn by imitation. And if you pretend something long enough, you will become it. And again, I think that's a theme as well.
I'm sorry, but this, I agree that that's a really good theme that's in this episode, but I love this scene so much, because with the headphones on and all of that, it just reminds me of the Love Actually scene of Colin Firth learning Portuguese. I love it. All that went through my head. It was so
with
great.
Fish in army.
It's great. Then you see
I think one of the things that bothers me though is like, in that, and I think it may be the evolution of how one learns languages, but what's happening is that Prince Charles is repeating the English portions too, not just repeating the Welsh parts, but he's also like, he's like, hello, my name is kind of thing. He says kind of funny. English parts, like, that's not right.
But yeah, everyone's looking at him like that. But he also has to stay in a dorm room and has issues making friends as always. Charles calls Anne and complains, and she's just like, I'll come to visit. And he's like, no, you won't. And she's like, no, you're probably right, I won't.
I love this though, but Charles calls Anne, and Anne's like, oh, all the students short, hairy, and angry like most Celts. She calls him Eeyore. She calls Charles Eeyore.
Don't be such an Eeyore.
I just love. Oh, you're such an Eeyore. And so then he has a dinner with all of the dons at this university. And he's so put out. You know, you can see in like the they do this introduction, they give a toast, whatever, and they start eating before the prince starts eating. And he's like, he's like taking it, he's physically like, oh. Yeah, I was like, I'm not special here. What are you talking about? But he admits he's not been to the library. He has no idea who Llewellyn is, who I guess was the very first Prince of Wales.
To be fair, it's been a day. I don't know what they're expecting.
Well, no, it really hasn't. I get the sense that time has passed and he just hasn't done a damn thing.
So I feel like it was kind of odd.
Well, but he has no clue who any of these people are. But he goes later, and the professor's like, well, you know, like most students, he can do some of this himself. But again, Charles, and this is the problem we have had with Charles at school, he doesn't do things for himself. He has servants do that for him, kind of thing.
You don't really get that feeling, especially later on in this episode, though, but we'll get to it. But
later on, he gets better. Yes.
Anyway, they... He translates the speech that Charles is going to make, or that someone had made for Charles, and they start sounding out syllables and stuff, and it's kind of funny him trying to sound out each syllable, because whenever it's like gets like the phlegm and the
back of the throat, back of the throat.
No, he just goes, huh. It's just so funny.
So funny to me is like your father and I actually had this discussion about, you know, Monty Python, that thing like the Castle R, where they had like written it on the back of the throat.
Anyway. Listening to him try to sound up the syllables is really funny. He goes crazy with tongue twisters, and the teacher gets serious and asks him to pay the Welsh some respect and to actually show up, like, unlike the last Prince of Wales. But to be fair, the guy was banished, so it's not like he could even go to Wales. Not that he would want to anyway, but still. Then the teacher leaves. No wonder Charles hasn't learned anything. he just leaves the lesson. I'm just like, okay. Whatever. Then Charles goes to the library and he looks into the history about like the Prince of Wales, general Welsh history. He actually does something for himself. So
it's a miracle. And I think that action, much like many things, like when you do it for yourself, there's an ownership that comes with it. Mm-hmm. And I think that ends up being important for him. Yeah.
Then you see Elizabeth, who's looking over the investiture speech and wants Charles to work on it himself. At the Prime Minister advises her to be like, hey, maybe let Charles put a little bit of his thing into it. And then Philip's like, maybe you shouldn't. It's Charles. Do you really want him to add anything? And then they mentioned how she worked on her speech at 21, apparently after being separated from Philip for 4 months, hoping she'd fall out of love with him. At least it's not 2 years like Margaret, but still, it's a similar thing. I do remember them bringing it up in the first season a little bit about like, oh, we had to be separated too for a little bit, and it's just like, but that's not for 2 years, and that's still a valid point. I still hate Peter though. Anyway, then the hope is that a Prince of Wales will be a Welsh-speaking son of Wales, which is what the professor tells Charles. Right. Charles mentions how, like, they're about to end the lesson And Charles is like, oh, I'll just eat alone like I usually do. And the guy's he takes pity on him. And then he's just like, I'll bring you home for dinner. And I love the way his wife finds out. His wife is like cooking.
His wife's pregnant. Like, she's pregnant. The house is a mess. And it's like, oh, God, I've got the Prince of Wales in my house.
Yeah, well, she's cooking dinner. She's on the phone. And then she looks to her, like, right and sees Charles, just his large, like, tall figure holding groceries. And is just like, hello. It's just really funny.
He's hunched. She's got the shoulders up.
I think the threshold's a little bit too low for him.
Yeah. Charles goes and sits in the living room while they're getting things ready, and the professor's talking to his wife, but their son kind of pokes his head, and he's very shy.
He's so cute.
And Charles is very sweet to him.
I love their interaction. It's adorable. He teaches Charles really to count to three. It's so cute.
Yes, and they're going to get up to 10 at some point. But they only speak Welsh in the house, and they talk about how they met in a town, in a protest for a town that is now covered by a reservoir that gives water to Liverpool. And the people, he explains, like, look, the people here want self-determination. They feel like their governing bodies are too remote. And I'm sitting here thinking Boston Tea Party. it's like y'all think it's remote when you're like living in Wales. Think about it being across an ocean.
Was years ago. That was centuries ago. Us Americans are so dumb. We only get horses right now. And look what God did us. Maybe you shouldn't separate.
But they realize after Charles leaves, they go to kiss their son goodnight.
Well, before,
and Charles seems kind of shocked.
Well, before that even happens, you're talking about what happened right before dinner with them being like, oh, we'll tuck you into bed or whatever. And Charles like watches the interaction and all that stuff. And that's really interesting seeing. It's like, oh, showing love. That's new. And then
as a parent.
And that's when they like talk at dinner is when they talk about the whole like underwater blast, native Welsh speaking village, all that stuff. But also they say, being governed by someone so remote that they don't even know that the person that's governing them doesn't really know what they want or need. And Charles says he knows the feeling, and they catch on to that. And they're just like, I don't know what he meant by that. And I'm just like, oh my God, Charles. Like, I mean, I understand it. I think that it's a good point to make, but again, it's a very, this comes up later, but it's just like equating your suffering as like slightly neglected child, comparing that to the Welsh and their troubles.
Right. Right. I mean, you see the poverty. Unequal. Right. And again, they don't even get into great depth with it, but you see the level of neglect and poverty in these Welsh cities, even in the little that is shown on this show. But you'd seen it a little bit with Aberfan. You'd seen it with other things. And of course, you have this economic crisis going on top of it. It is profound.
Mm-hmm.
And you live in palaces, dude. Stop it. Anyway, so Charles is like staring out to sea. I mean, this is
something. It's not just a longing stare.
He's like trying to memorize his speech, and he's staring out to sea. And again, some of this is lovely because we are Americans. We don't know, or many people don't know, where Wales is on the west coast of England.
And you just said where it is, Mom.
What?
You just said where it is.
Right, but it is so much of it is coastline, and strategically, obviously, in.
Well, it's certainly not landlocked on an island.
All of it is right. It's England. But when you talk about bringing together the United Kingdom and uniting it, it was strategically very important.
Well, some people just don't know what that Wales is a thing. So anyway, then, Charles is bringing on a speech in Welsh, and he talks to his teacher, and the teacher's like, I got invited to the speech, but I hope you appreciate the fact that I'm not going to go. Like, I hope that you are okay with that and understand why.
Right. And then Charles is like, look, I've got some things I want to add. Can you do a translation for me?
Mm-hmm. And the teacher is kind of impressed.
And he's kind of impressed with the content of it as well. He's kind of like, ooh, subversive. So
and then Dickie greets Charles. It's the day of the investiture. They're going to get dressed together.
His uniform. Holy shit. He walks into the dorm with this giant hat with plumes and shit. Damn.
Yeah, he's fully decorated. He wants to go all out. But yeah, they get him dressed. And on the way there in the carriage, it's this part cracked me up so much. But like, he's being booed. But on like the TV people or whatever, or the reporters, they're like, a good response from onlookers, only a few boos to be heard. That it literally is mostly boos. It's just
right. But the castle where this is held is obviously Welsh castle, and it's very like old school, almost medieval fortifications. It's a stronghold. It is a meaningful location for this to be held. And you've got Charles kind of in the bowels of this castle about to walk up on the stage, and he's kind of like prepping himself to go on stage. You see a lot of parallels, and this is one of those times where like the parallels are you get it. He's preparing to go on stage and take the stage as the Prince of Wales. There are great outfits too. I gotta add this, like we see Anne briefly and the Queen Mother. They're dressed really, really well, but Elizabeth has the ickiest helmet hat. It is fucking hideous. And what on earth made her wear that? Oh my God.
I don't know.
You have all the money in the fucking world and you wear this shit. It's just terrible.
Anyway, the speech goes well.
He gets a crown ring robe. I mean, it's like the big, you know, old school.
It's a whole thing. It's right. A whole ceremony.
But he gets a kiss from Mummy.
It's barely a kiss. Like her lips are next to his cheek. I don't think she even kisses him because I don't see any residue from lipstick. I don't know.
But he gives a speech.
He gives a speech. It goes well. The Welsh people are impressed. Then he goes to his professor's house the next day or something and mentions, he gives him a gift, which is a book of tongue twisters, which is cute as a thank you. He sees the child again and they're speaking Welsh to each other and it's really cute. And then the professor, before he leaves, is like, oh yeah, well, how did this speech go down with your family? And he's like, they don't speak Welsh. They don't know what I said. I think that's kind of funny.
And he also says, I'm going on a 4-day tour of Wales. I'm not going straight back to my life. So that's meaningful. But then Charles gets home to Buckingham Palace. He wants to see his mom. Mom's already retired. She's like, oh, fine. I'll see you, whatever. He asks to see Elizabeth in her bedroom, and she's angry. She's very, very angry.
She knows what the speech said now, so
yeah. And she's like, oh, these are just parallels to your whining, blah blah blah.
They're making her the bad guy because that's what they do in these seasons. They make Elizabeth the bad guy.
Yeah, and again, it's just
Charles also doesn't like the fact that he's not being properly congratulated for his triumph. And I mean, I get Elizabeth's point where she's like, if we all stopped to thank everyone for whenever they did something,
for doing your job,
never get anything done. Yes. And so I agree with that. But at the same time, like a little good job is okay. But then she like knows what the speech said. And she's like, the parallels to your quote unquote suffering is pretty apparent, and I'm sure everybody who knows Welsh probably caught on to that. And how's that going to make us look like? I mean, you have to consider other things, Charles.
right exactly. It's an interesting question too. It's almost like he's making promises that, you know, again, he can't keep because he's not king.
Well, not yet anyway.
Right. And so, well, he's king now.
I just said yet.
Right, but he's 70 something years old and the speech is made when he was,
I'm aware, 21 or something.
Yeah, so it's an interesting question. But she's very, and again, the performance is very, very angry, which seems whatever. And Charles is like, I have a beating heart, I'm not just a symbol. Such a fucking way. And he's very angry in this scene, which again, it loses a lot of its luster to me. But then we go to Richard II, and he is in Richard II.
Well, before we get to that, there's a particular line I want to highlight here. He's like, I have a voice, and she's like, I'll let you in on a little secret. No one wants to hear it. And I'm like, I wrote down good parenting, a guidebook. But then also he's being a little bit overbearing now. And I think at this point it's like, okay, well, you made a speech, you gave the Welsh people some promises that we can't keep right now, or maybe ever keep to a certain extent. We can pay more attention to them, but I'm not saying that we're just gonna be like, okay, yeah, you're a separate nation now. We're not gonna do that. Because it's the United Kingdom. We want to keep it united. And I think that it's interesting that she's just like, they're making her out to be the villain in this episode, where it's just kind of like, I understand where she's coming from. Like, he is being, it's such a contrast of him like being like, oh, well, now I'm being like a whiny little bitch or whatever. And I'm just like, okay, great. Now you're being whiny. Great. Awesome. Didn't want that, but all right. But yeah, and then we go... Like, I wrote down, they really had to make Elizabeth the bad guy so Charles could be the hero, but at what cost? I mean, come on. But yeah, then he performs as Richard II, and it's cool. And Anne is in the crowd. I don't think I noticed that initially, but she is in the crowd. I really like the staging of it. I think it's a very, like, cool... Like, there are certain times where with Shakespeare, you just have to make it cooler looking and make it like interesting. If it's going to not be interesting to the audience because they don't understand it, you have to make it visually interesting. I think
Richard II is a play that's like that. I think there's a lot of introverted stuff going on.
I think that's true for a lot of the histories in general. I think that that's
true. I agree.
With Shakespeare are like, you can even do like, Henry V, part 3, or whatever the fuck. I don't even know if there's... I don't think
fourth part 3. Is a standalone.
Yeah, no, Henry V is alone. But you can do whatever part of that, but you have to make it cool. And with all the histories, you can, because there's usually war. But it just depends. I don't know.
Battle of Agincourt speech. That's always good. Or Richard III, My Kingdom for a Horse. But, you know, you're not really going to get
that. That's at the very end. So, I mean, like, you have to go through a lot Richard of stuff. Richard II.
Well, you've got princes dying in Richard III. You got good stuff.
You got smothering. Yeah, you got some smothering in there.
That's some good stuff.
But so does Othello. So, I mean, it's not exclusive.
Othello's got all the shit, man.
I've got a lot of backstabbing. Well, not as much as Julius Caesar, though. Anyway. You get a lot of variety in Shakespeare, but I think that there. I love Josh O'Connor's performance of this.
I do too, and Anne's watching it, and she's very taken with the parallels and how Charles is inhabiting this hollow crown speech, because he clearly feels that he is just this. He's not being given any power, which I think is part of what the Hollow Crown speech is about.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that, and again, her reaction to it is quite helpful.
Mm-hmm.
What was your best part?
I had a couple. The Shakespeare I liked because it actually had something to do with the plot, like this coinciding thing, like bookended thing for that really makes sense. And then the evolution of the teacher, I liked how he like, his whole arc with Charles is good. I liked it a lot. I wrote the Shakespeare again. I don't know why. The interactions with the kid are really cute. Anne's awesome. I love Anne in this episode. I love her and Charles's little back and forth and dynamic and all that stuff. Also, I didn't write this down, but I noticed as I was going along, the humor of this episode is pretty good. I really like some of the jokes in this. It's self-deprecation, but also like anti-whales humor and stuff. It's kind of funny, but then
anti-whales.
Anyway, I like that. What about you?
The only thing I wrote was Josh O'Connor as Charles.
I forgot about that. Yeah, Josh O'Connor's amazing.
Right. I mean, that is the main thing that I liked about this episode. But all the things that you've noted, I think, were great. I liked the subversion of the and Charles winning over this Welsh professor. I thought that was good. So yeah, I thought that was really good. What was your worst part?
Well, first, I replaced one of the Shakespeare's that I put down with Josh O'Connor, so it's all even
there.
But my worst part, I only had one, and it was Elizabeth the villain.
Yeah, my worst part.
They villainized her as much as they did and made her like just this, again, absentee mother, being cold, being awful, no humanity, blah, 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 blah. They bring it up again. And we kind of brushed over it because it's something we've heard 20 million times in the show. It's just like, we don't have room for like caring about every single little
humanity.
Thing. There's no room for humanity. It's like, whatever. And then, yeah, I think that Elizabeth being portrayed as the villain constantly is counterintuitive to what the show. I'm confused on what the show wants us to feel about Elizabeth because it changes from episode to episode because it's like, well, we want Elizabeth to be seen as good and a good leader, has a good relationship with her husband, great mother, blah, blah. And then you get to this for like some episodes where it's just like, she has no humanity. She does not feel, she doesn't care about her family.
She can't cry.
It's so stupid. I don't know what they want us to feel about her. I hate it. Like, make up your fucking mind. At least in the first two seasons, I knew that they wanted us to like Elizabeth because she's our protagonist. She's in every fucking episode. Make her likable or something. If you're going to make her an antagonist of some kind, which I don't think would be the right way to go, it's just make it make sense. Have some consistency here. And if she is an antagonist in a certain subplot, make sure that's consistent too.
Well, and resolve it.
Resolve right? it.
If you have an overarching theme, make sure that things come back to that theme, and they don't, and it's annoying. They just have a bunch of diverging themes, and maybe that's it's more quote unquote realistic that way. It's like, well, but then what's the point of your fucking show? So yeah, more heartless Elizabeth was my worst part. The heartless, especially this season. It's like, you know, the only heart she has is for horses and Porchy. Fuck it. Yeah. Fuck all of it.
I was imagining like a horse heart, like Daenerys eating the horse heart. I don't know why that came to mind.
That'd be funny. But all right, so how'd you grade this episode?
I gave it an A-. I think it's a really good episode. I think that developing Charles is a good idea, especially the new Charles being like grown up. I loved the way that they framed certain things, but again, like the thing holding it back is that Elizabeth has no humanity and that she's being villainized. But I'm confused on how they're supposed to make us feel about this because we know that Charles is going to fuck up majorly later on and we're not supposed to like Charles. So what are we supposed to feel? Is this supposed to make Charles look good? Like,
maybe that was their point. But maybe that was their point. It's like, oh, well, you're going to kind of like Charles in this episode, but mom yells at him, so you shouldn't like him. I mean, or he yells back. I mean, it's just like that last scene is just anachronistic to the rest of the whole episode. It's just bizarre.
I feel like it's supposed to set up how he feels later on and like set up reasons why he feels the way he feels. And I'm just like, it does not excuse all the bullshit that you do later on, Charles. It doesn't.
You don't have fucking trauma.
Well, I'm not saying that he doesn't have any trauma. I think that there are certain things.
Everyone has trauma then.
I don't know. I can understand the idea of like, but the thing is it's not equal because I think that them bringing up Anne being like, I'm irrelevant is a little bit more compelling than Charles being like, oh, I'm the heir. They can't decide whether I'm irrelevant or not. Like, because until something happens, I'm relevant. And so I think that studying how Anne feels about certain things would be a little bit more interesting because it's like, oh, well, I'm not the heir, I'm the spare. And once he has children, I'm going to be even more of a spare. Like I'm obsolete at this point. Yeah. So it's kind of like, I'm supposed to feel bad for Charles, but at the same time, I feel worse for Anne because she's more irrelevant in the eyes of other people, but at least she's Philip's favorite. So
how bad should things be? Don't know that yet. So, you know.
Yes, we do.
Yes, we do. Of course we do. Anyway, I gave this B+, A-, and I think A- is probably more appropriate here in that I feel like as an episode, this is so far in season 3, and we've watched more episodes than this, probably the best structured, one of the best structured episodes. There are a couple others that are well structured, but as far as having a story and telling it and bookending it, like you said, and having like the cuts in between things make some sense, it does do that pretty well. And so I feel like it's not going to be an A. I don't think I will be surprised if in these two seasons I have an A episode, honestly. I may be wrong. We shall see. But it is clearly on the better end. And so that's where I put it. But we are going to be going forward with the next two episodes in our next podcast. And those will include season 3, episode 7, Moondust.
And episode 8, Dangling Man.
Yes. And so this, and so this will be very much a fun thing going forward, and certainly something we want to share with you. So we hope that you join us. And
cheers.